like to have this brought before us for consideration?
I certainly would.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that we adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 303 Resources, draft of 6-1203J as a working document.
Thank you very much. You'll notice on the end of the legislation, since you're off your amendment that you had expressed an interest in, you don't have it?
HJ.
In your packets.
Okay. I got H.
No, H is not the one.
J. You can have mine.
Well, that's all right.
The amendment, Madam Chairman, was where?
Right at the end. I think that, is this not supported by DNR, Fish and Game, the sponsor? Okay. Are there questions? If there are, I'll get somebody up, have them go through it. I wouldn't normally operate this way, but you guys go do this. Sir, I got another copy.
Well, Madam Chair, the major question that was raised was whether or not the Gulfstream Public Use Area could meet all of the goals and still allow for mining development to take place. Was there an inconsistency?
No, there was an inconsistency with whether fish habitat and all the activities of recreation could take place.
Yeah.
Those have been solved, yes. Senator Frye.
Well, also, I think on the, it looks as though the part that qualifies the mineral entry makes it has to be compatible with 1 and 2 up here, which I think is an easier test than the former draft.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah. And I think there's still some discretion there, but it certainly looks like it's better than the previous one.
Is there anyone who wishes to speak in opposition to this piece of legislation? Is there anyone who wishes to speak quickly in support of this piece of legislation? And it is a committee substitute that's before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bill Blute from the Alaska Environmental Lobby. I'd just like to state our support of the legislation and that we're happy with the committee substitute. Thank you.
Thank you. That was short and sweet. Anybody else want to speak to this legislation?
Madam Chairman, Larry Ostrowski from DNR. We think it's a better bill than it was a few days ago, and we support it.
Anybody else?
How about Fish and Game?
Fish and Game supports the bill.
Thank you very much. Representative.
Fish and Game thinks it's the worst bill.
Larry Howell with the Alaska Railroad, and like we are in support of the legislation.
Thank you very much.
Kind of like an assembly line here. Barney B. Dowd, with Representative Mike Davis, the prime sponsor of the bill, would like to thank the senator's staff for working so hard to come up with what we think is a better bill.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Anybody else who wishes to testify on this piece of legislation? Whatever comment period is closed, what is your desire?
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 303 Resources as individual recommendations, ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? So be it. Did the people from Governor's office get here on this next piece of legislation?
Yes.
Okay, the next piece before bill before us is House Bill 400 relating to the fisherman business tax. We have here, it's a governor's bill, and to testify is Royce Weller of the Department of Revenue. Royce.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Royce Weller, Department of Revenue. Madam Chairman, House Bill 400 would put into place for the first time civil penalties to be levied on those processors or those individuals engaged in processing fishery products, a civil penalty, graduated civil penalties. The issue of audit by legislative audit report that came out June 9, 1989. As part of the recommendations of that audit, number five, recommended to the department that legislation be submitted to amend the statute to allow the department to levy civil penalties. We currently have criminal penalties already on those processors that are failing to be licensed in the state, however, are processing fisheries resources in the state. There's a fiscal note submitted by the department. It's a unusual for any department, but it's a zero operating and a positive fiscal note of roughly $500,000. We believe that there are roughly 50 catcher processors during the height of the season that are coming in and out of the waters of the state that are not licensed. They're not paying taxes. We hope that this civil penalty provision will allow us to be sure that they are licensed and eventually paying their taxes. So it's a positive fiscal note, Madam Chair.
Senator Zalewski, then Senator Frank.
I wonder if you could explain a little bit about what is happening right now. Everybody is supposed to be paying the tax. Why are there people that are not paying the tax? I mean, what you've expanded, as I understand, by Section 4, you've expanded those that are covered. What have we had before? Have we had a loophole or what?
Madam Chairman, the civil penalty provision is contained in Section 2 of the bill. Mm-hmm. At issue is the more those areas that are furthest from the urban areas of the state for which there's difficulty to getting our people on the grounds out there to witness the actual fishing openings, primarily in the Fort Mueller area, the Bering Sea, Bristol Bay, along the chain. We've had, over the last 12 months, in fact, we have two auditors in the region right now, but over the last 12 to 16 months, we witnessed firsthand on videotape boats that we aborted that are, in fact, in state waters, undeniably, that are not licensed. What happens is they enter the waters of the state to take advantage of maybe transferring the product or picking up supplies. Processing does take place. They may be in the state's waters for 12 hours, 24 hours, a week, 2 weeks, and then leave the state. Yet they're not licensed and they're not filing tax returns.
Through the chair. So the only thing we're not expanding, everybody now is subject to the tax. It's merely a question you don't have a hammer to say to really prosecute those people to make it worth the while to go after those that are not now paying. Is that correct?
Madam Chairman, that's correct. They're subject to the tax now. What we're trying to do is put in place procedure to ensure compliance with the tax.
In other words, you're making the fines where it's not worthwhile to try to run around it. Is that what you're doing?
Criminal penalty, Madam Chairman, is obviously very costly, very time-consuming, and we concur with the legislative auditors. What we need is a civil penalty to drive home the point quicker and cheaper.
Senator Lassen or Senator Jaro, do you have any questions on this piece of legislation?
The only question I have, Madam Chairman, is on Section 5, line 29, what is meant by grilling. Is gutting, grilling, slimming, and uprising?
Madam Chairman.
I bet somebody from revenue doesn't have to make these politics.
That's before my time, Madam Chairman. I'm not sure what grilling is either.
I know what it is. It means to prepare it on a grill.
Well, I'm wondering if they just didn't mean gilling. Can they throw an extra letter in there?
I think they may, but I don't know. Would you like to take this in a subcommittee of two, check it out, bring it to us Monday, or are you satisfied with the resolution?
I think it's
Madam Chairman, we can certainly check if that's a typo. I think it's an excellent piece of legislation that it works. How can we give Senator Jaroff these additional fish tax if we don't collect them?
Senator Frank.
Well, Madam Chair, that's what I was going to. Royce, do you think we'll get our 1/8 share out of this?
Madam Chairman, if the question is, I guess to direct at the fiscal note, we obviously believe that we'll improve compliance, we'll improve the receipts. I'm not sure what the 1/8.
Well, I was just wondering if the municipalities and 3/8 for the fish process are maybe that backwards. Anyways.
Oh, I'm
kind of a facetious remark.
Yes.
I apologize.
Many let's take with the bill. Anything else? Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, I don't know
what grilling and gilling is. We'll have to find out.
I will find out.
Okay, is anybody here from Fish and Game? Staff, would you check on that? Just give a call to Fish and Game, ask what the heck, or the governor's office, ask what the heck is going on. So we can go quickly.
Call attorneys and not Fish and Game.
Our attorneys?
It's going to finance, so.
There might be a typo.
It might be a typographical.
Because of finance, I'll try to take care of it.
Oh, that, it doesn't go to finance, does it? I guess it does.
It's a tax issue.
It's an income.
Okay, Fred, take care of it. Anybody else wants to testify on this piece of legislation?
Madam Chair, just
yes.
We should really be able to prepare to move this, should we not? I think it's a good piece of legislation. Would you accept a motion?
Most assuredly.
Contingent on just checking out what may be a typographical. I would move committee substitute for House Bill 400, finance amended with individuals' recommendations and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? So be it. I think that's just about got us to mental health. Make sure. Yesterday, day before, we were working with and contemplating committee substitute for Senate Bill number 493, which is the mental health bill. Those people who are working with us, would you please join us at the table so that we can continue the work session on this legislation? Do you wait?
It probably won't be that long. Let's get back as quick as we can.
Okay, that means no action can be taken. Okay. At least
we should be back by 2:30.
Okay, we may be forced to recess again. Senator Petula?
I know, David, but this is how it goes.
Let me see if I can.
I'm learning more.
We'll have a brief recess, 2 minutes.
It is supposed to say Gilling.
It's supposed to say Gilling. We'll change it, okay?
I kind of like grilling.
Oh, yeah.
I do with fish.
Nancy, did you get copies of this? Did Bruce give you copies of this? Did Bruce give you copies?
I don't have a copy. Do I?
I just got the copies.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's why I don't have it.
Yeah. I remember when the
Oh, I see. All right. Oh, that's fine.
At the close of yesterday's hearing, we had gotten just to the point, our work session, we'd gotten just to the point of going through some alternatives. Was there anything to come up before we started those alternatives? Okay. Mr. Custer, would you like to run through it?
Very briefly, Madam Chair, the idea here is that there's been a dispute since statehood, 31 years. This lawsuit was filed in 1982, challenging legislation enacted in 1978. We've gone through since 1985, 5 years of trying to resolve this, trying to focus on lands, trying to come to a resolution, and have not done that. And it struck me as maybe a different approach to looking at what we ought to do here would be in order, given this long history of dispute and the problematic nature of trying to craft a resolution without knowing with any certainty whether it would be acceptable to the court, whether it be a legal discharge of the state's obligation as trustee. In the provisions of Title 13, there is a statute which allows a trustee to go to court before the trustee acts and ask the court about a about any sort of prospective action, to get a determination from the court before the trustee acts, whether that is a legitimate and legal discharge of that trustee's obligations. The principle being that because you place such obligations on trustees, you should not force them to act at their peril and then find out later whether or not they acted within the scope of their powers as trustee, but instead allow them to go to the court and ask before acting, is this a legitimate discharge of my obligations as trustee? It seemed to me that this is the kind of situation where that may be an appropriate course of conduct for the state to take, so that the legislature would have before it a variety of options which the court has predetermined are legal and legitimate ways or manners in which the legislature may discharge its obligation as trustee for the mental health trust. Given the length of time that this has been a contentious issue, Mr. Gottstein spoke last evening about how since statehood the state has been mishandling the trust, it struck me that perhaps, particularly in light of the late determination of impasse with respect to value in this legislative session, that it might be appropriate during the interim to go to court, ask the court with respect to a variety of possible options the state might take, which of these would be legitimate discharges, give a direction in the legislation to the Attorney General to do that, have the Attorney General inform the court that the legislature will be waiting for this next session, ask the court for expedited treatment of this matter, and then come back to the legislature by the 10th day of the next legislative session with some answers from the court. Now, the sort of parting comment was that, well, it wouldn't work because it could go to the state Supreme Court and then the U.S. Supreme Court, and you can't do that in that period of time. I think with good faith efforts on the part of all parties that these questions can get at least through the Superior Court by the next legislative session. Presumably, some of those decisions by the Superior Court may be subject to appeal. I mean, the state really simply is, by this mechanism, proposing to find out what we can do legitimately and discharge the state's obligation as trustee. The idea being that then we come back and the legislature knows with some certainty, if it picks a course of action, that course of action will be legitimate. I think it would be unfortunate if the fact that it may take longer than 6 months to get final answers from the Alaska Supreme Court, even though I think that's possible, with good faith efforts on the part of the parties and cooperation by the court with an understanding that the legislature is awaiting these answers, to get answers within that time period. But even if it took a little longer than that, I think it would be unfortunate if it's simply the time issue that dooms this kind of an approach, which has so many advantages in terms of allowing the state to proceed with certainty that it's discharging its duty as trustee. That's basically the approach in a nutshell. The draft that I've included contains some legislative findings about how we got to where we are, state's purposes, and makes clear, as I think Mr. Walker and Mr. Gottstein stated with respect to one of the amendments to Senator Coghill's bill yesterday, one of the proposed amendments to Senator Coghill's bill, that the things less than sales, leases, and exchanges of mental health land ought to be able to go ahead because the state is, in fact, paying rent for those mental health lands. So the bill, in addition, would authorize the Commissioner of Natural Resources to issue rights of way, permits, and other authorizations, but the prohibition on sales, leases, and exchanges would remain. And those would be basically the two purposes: direct the Attorney General to get instructions from the court and report back by the 10th day of the next session, and second, allow the Commissioner of Natural Resources to issue rights of way permits and other authorizations while keeping the prohibition on sales, leases, and exchanges as a result of the Intermunicipal Trust Commission's action earlier this year.
Tom, would you go through the four or five recommended questions to ask the court?
Okay, I certainly would. These are ones that basically just popped into my mind as ones that people might be interested in getting answers to. The first one is, this is on page 5 of the draft. The first one is the approach taken in Chapter 48, that is valuing the original million acre grant, exchanging it for land of equal value and legislative designations and renting that land back for 8% of its value. The second option.
Just a second, please. Madam Chair, I wonder if everybody has a copy of that.
This item here is.
Yes, I'll give an address.
Well, no, I don't think Senator Lyons.
I'll send advice on that.
Here,
it goes
I'm sorry, right
here. On page 5, is that right, Mr.
Page 5. The first one is the Chapter 48 approach. The second one is the idea that the chairman alluded to yesterday, the possibility of establishing a guaranteed income stream of some form, and eliminating the land issue with respect to income from the Middle Gulf Trust. This would be a one possibility might be to make the current interim solution permanent. That is the current debt incurred allocation of 5% of the state's unrestricted general fund revenues annually to the Middle Gulf Trust interim account. That would be a second possibility to ask the court. Third possibility would be with respect to the value questions. Would $2.43 billion be a legitimate value to use in the Chapter 48 process?
Madam Chair?
Senator Sturgeon.
Just one question on this one. I'm not quite sure I understand all of the numbers, but what was the other number that we've heard, something about $984 million? What was that? Wasn't there another number?
The department number, the minority report, was about $600 million.
564.
I understand that.
The 900 you're talking about, I think, Senator Sturgeon, was the evaluation under this method that reached the 564 of the present acreage in Senator Coghill's bill, which is the
pool of replacement using the same techniques that arrived at either 564. Okay, that was 984.
910.
Okay. No, I just get these numbers, and I'm not sure where they came from. Okay.
The fourth one reads, eliminating the trust over time by paying the trust for its land and then appropriating the money to pay for mental health programs. There has been some informal questions asked of the Department of Law regarding the statements in the Supreme Court's decision in the Weiss case with respect to a set-off against any state liability for money the state has spent for mental health programs. In the Weiss case, the Supreme Court's conclusion was that the trust should be reconstituted, that for lands that the state had sold, the state had a monetary liability to the trust for the fair market value of those lands on the date of sale, and that against that monetary liability, the state could set off money that it had appropriated for mental health programs. The implication being, at least, that when the state sells mental health lands, receives money for those lands, and spends that money on mental health programs, that is a legitimate discharge of the trust. And so this would be asking the court that question. Could the state do that? And then the fifth is that any other approach that the Attorney General could ask, under the statute, any other party with an interest in the trust, meaning any of the beneficiaries, could also make proposals to the court to determine the validity of those proposals as means for the state discharging its obligation.
Has the administration made a decision as to whether they would uphold or veto the legislation currently before us? Does the administration have a position at this point?
I don't believe so.
I certainly haven't heard any. I'm just asking whether or not.
Are there questions from any other member of the committee? Are there questions on the part of the go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm David Walker, representatives of the beneficiary in Wisely, Alaska. I have looked through the possible committee substitute for House Bill 493 that Tom has just discussed and reviewed the papers, rather than question it and see if it's possible to meld that in with some of the things we're doing. I don't believe that it is, and so I'd just like to address that briefly. I viewed the fact that we had a proposed mechanism through Chapter 48 as being a settlement proposal, and that proposal here, the one you're discussing, really, in my mind, doesn't accomplish anything in that regard. Its goal, or one of the goals, or questions that are asked are questions regarding the elimination of the trust. It's very straightforward about that. The proposal does attempt to alter or rewrite history, in my opinion, in that in the findings and purposes section, it addresses the resolution of the matters of language and controversy before us right now about Chapter 48, whether consensus was required.
Where do you find that, please?
Well, in the beginning of
the market.
In the findings clause, it says at the beginning, the state and the plaintiffs and interveners in Wisby State, it was contemplated that they would reach consensus on procedures to determine the value of the original median acre mental health trust lands. This isn't on bill drafting paper, but it's on page one, section one, number one, paragraph, lowercase I. So it attempts to do those things. I think that we have actually been at impasse over this valuation for some time. When the Interim Mental Health Trust Commission requested us to negotiate with the state, and we did, and we reported back months ago to the commission that we were at impasse, and that impasse has been recognized. I do not believe that the Department of Law or the legislature need the legislature's charge or authority to do what this bill directs them to do. That option has always been available to them, and basically then this bill accomplishes nothing but ask the beneficiaries to put everything on hold and accept the continued activities of the state toward the trust, which we're not prepared to do.
Yes.
Madam Chair, for the record, Dennis Scholl here is alternate to the commission. I just would like to do two things. I know these folks, these three fellows who have been hanging around with for a number of years, are all quite brilliant, and I've been often amazed and educated by what they've done at the Trust Commission meetings. But they're also most brilliant in doing what lawyers do, and that's legal stuff. With the proposal that Tom presented to you, one thing you don't see there attached there is, let's say, a physical note. I have been hanging around with George and Lydia, working with these folks for many years. Hope you don't choose the option of putting some more money in this thing and run them back to go back and forth to the board over and over again and not make the decision that you as legislators need to make, being in two capacities, trying to reach a decision that exercises your responsibilities as trustee for this trust to make a decision in the best interest of the trust, especially when an alternative has been presented to you before you for a good many years, except for the twist at the end here, that is also in the interest of the state. The proposal with the amendments that I think Senator Coghill will give to you today does those things.
We haven't been through that proposal yet.
If you get to it, I think that would be a reasonable thing to get to. I know Tom and David and Jim have been working real hard, and I've admired their work, and I'm kind of behind at a young age of 40. I'm kind of tired of their work, and I think we have a solution in front of you that's good.
Madam Chair?
I think we're looking for a solution, or trying to find a solution that we feel protects the interest of the state, protects the income stream, so that no health needs can be met, and meets, in our view, the requirements to get legislation passed this body. So that's what we're trying to do. Senator,
no, just something Dennis said, you talking about extra costs. How do we handle this? How are we financing this?
Oh, I can give you that.
Well, no, I don't know that.
Madam.
You brought up the issue. I don't know what you mean by that.
That's my understanding. Under the present procedure, I guess, is that the Supreme Court made a ruling to put you all in a position of defendants. There's a later ruling that there's an interim award of attorney's fees for these attorneys that on a shoestring, starting with Senator Cooper, brought the case. So until things get finalized by the court, whichever level that happens to be, you would expect that that arrangement is going to continue, and it's also been a painful one for the court.
Okay, but that's what you're referring to is to the...
That this legal work costs something, and it's going to cost some more if they're going to have to keep going back to the court.
Senator Coghill.
Madam Chairman, if you go back to the minority recommendations, and I don't know whether you have these in here, but I could get a copy. I could have Nancy copy the particular page. But Rod makes on page 31, makes his recommendations when he set himself aside from the other two in the minority report. And he makes the recommendations of three things. And the three things was the driving force that originally got us together to put together the original 493. And he says, change the law and accept the $2.2 billion value under the procedures adopted by the interim.
Wait a minute. Rod says do that?
Yes.
I raised that as an option.
Yeah.
For you to consider.
I can copy this.
Okay. I'm sorry. I had understood this. You just say he's saying this is what we ought to do, but go ahead.
No, I'll read it. Says, I therefore recommend that the commissioner send a letter to both the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate explaining that she is unable to comply with the law as currently written. Enclosed copies of both the Mental Health Commission majority and the minority reports, and lists three options for legislative consideration. Number one, change the law and accept the $2.2 billion value determined under the procedures adopted by the Interim Health Mental Health Trust Commission. Two, change the law and accept the 5.6 plus million value determined under the procedures I believe should be used to comply with Chapter 48. Or three, appropriate additional funds permit the Intermental Health Trust Commission to continue seeking consensus, and I think that this is probably where Tom basically is coming from in his structure. We took the basis that we had three things that we had to accomplish in the reestablishing the trust, establishing the procedure, and setting forth the evaluation. And that's what we did in this bill. So I think that if you go to this possible committee substitute, why you're just going back to the number three on this, and we're starting from scratch again. And so I think that if we took the new consensus but after going through all of the amendments, Madam President, last night I took the liberty to go ahead and have these correlated into a committee substitute for your consideration, and it leaves the end is that the legislative budget not a committee would, if there's an impasse on the land trades, to be removed from the trust would be referred to the budget not a committee for the decision, which gives a finality
That then ignores the possible acre-to-acre exchange.
We have the value. We could take the acre-to-acre in there. We just left the E, Madam Chairman, the way it is in the proposed bill now, and we could.
I thought yesterday they had said to substitute F for E. Has that been changed since yesterday?
We have an option. We could do the F, which would leave it as the present law, or we could put the E in, which made the, if there was an impasse, the decision would go to the Budget and Audit Committee, or in other words, the legislature would make a political determination.
And what did you do in this substitute as far as the wording concerning the the 2.24, it seems to me, has that been
we
renewed
left that,
and replaced?
It's
still here.
We felt, Madam Chairman, instead of taking the proposed language that we took, we left the bill exactly the way it was, and that's on page 2 lines 20 through 24, which let the figure in there. Because it seemed that when we projected having the language go as we recommended, that there didn't seem to be a consensus.
With this legislation, I don't see really any finding section, but I would like to see somehow the main goal of this thing set out as to really what's the purpose of the legislation. And we all know what it is, but you know, it's nothing stated here. Are there any suggestions on that? Has anybody given that any thought?
Madam Chair.
Let me see.
Oh, excuse
would
me.
You like to address this as a parent or?
We've talked about that, Dennis and I, and have a suggestion for you to fulfill the court-ordered reconstitution of the Mental Health Trust by certifying an initial 1987 value from the trust, to create a new trust corpus from the land and resources in the legislative designated areas of the state, three, to make the trust productive through a contractual rental agreement, and fourth, to establish the trust reevaluation procedures which effectively continue to reflect the value of the original trust land over time. Just kind of set those things in the purpose statement. That was our suggestion.
Jim?
Madam Chair, I think that would be fine. I think when this bill was originally worked up with Senator Coghill and others, that the feeling was that I think particularly the things that you're talking about, getting out of the land business for mental health and focusing on mental health lands, that the findings and purposes part of Chapter 48, 1987, really goes through that at great length, and that probably does, I think, what you said. Now, I think what Mrs. Wobein and Dr. Schultz said would also be okay. I guess our primary concern at this point, of course, is to get the bill moving, and would hate to see it delayed, you know, too much longer at this point.
Are you telling me, Jim, that you're expecting to see this bill go out of here today?
I'm not expecting anything. I would certainly like it.
Well, we still have, there are still, I think, some areas of decision for this committee to make, and that is approaches to be taken, the values to be set, the method of land exchanges at the end of the, if the bill of Senator Coghill's bill is accepted and amended. To date, we have no committee substitute before us. We have some recommendations and some, shall we say, negotiations, and we're trying to get that in my estimation. Tom?
Madam Chair, if I could just make one comment. Senator Coghill quoted from Deputy Commissioner Swope's report. I think it's important that the record note that when Commissioner Gorsuch concluded her review of the work of the majority and the minority, she made some recommendations. This is on page 4 of her April 17, 1990 letter to Thelma Langdon. Her first recommendation is request that the court issue instructions prior to any further legislative action. And that is the recommendation that's embodied in the draft that I prepared and presented to the committee for consideration. I think it's
also, Chair, if I might, that's one thing, although I couldn't swear to this until we get back from a board meeting on the 5th and 6th, and I'm sure that if they disagree, they'll come and tell you immediately. I'm sure something could happen. But I would suspect that the Mental Health Board, when it reviews the report provided under the statutes by Commissioner Gorsuch to the board, would disagree with that recommendation.
Chairperson, the Mental Health Board just constitutes a special interest also. I'm not so sure that we ought to pay attention to the legal counsel here in this matter, who has just made a statement about this particular subject I tend to think that we ought to use a draft suggested by the administration of it as the focus of that front.
I think, thank you, Senator. I think that's what I was trying to bring up to all members concerned, that there are still some major decisions to be made by this committee as to which approach we take, and if so, at what level on which approach. Senator Sturgeolowski,
no,
was a big side.
No, no, I'm just trying to reconcile Dennis's comments, but I have. I'm concentrating too hard, and so my wheels have slipped the
Well, if you comment on his comments, you'd be dead. That's what's wrong.
Is that right?
That's right. Not for his hand.
No, I have the answer, but I had it already. I don't need new information.
Jim?
Madam Chair, in addressing this most recent proposal from Mr. Tester, I'd just like to say, in my view, that this is, it's essentially two things. One, it is exactly the same as doing nothing, because the State Attorney General's Office of the Department of Law can do that anyway. And that it will not solve anything. It's presented in the form of as kind of a friendly question to the court, but in truth it will be a fully adversarial proceeding, and it will be exactly the same
as what
we have now.
Please explain a completely adversarial approach. I'd like to understand what you mean by that.
Well, in other words, we would be making exactly the same arguments, for example, with respect to return of the land. We would feel compelled to make the challenges to the land if it's permitted by the court, and of course we would appeal that if it wasn't. We would be arguing that the state, you know, breached the agreement that it made in Chapter 48, and I'd like to point out that the one thing that this bill does do in its finding section is try and get a leg up in the litigation by, as David Walker said, rewriting history, and it does that in a couple places where it's...
Where's the finding section, Jim?
On page one.
Where does it...
Which bill?
Yeah.
In Tom's committee substitute.
Page
one.
Okay.
Under...
Okay, I understand that.
I thought
you were speaking to this bill here.
Which one?
I found the right piece of legislation.
Okay. On page two, the subsection three, it misstates that the $2.243 billion is the plaintiff's figure, and when in fact that's the number that's arrived at by procedures approved by the Intermental Health Trust Commission, which is significantly lower than the figure advocated by the plaintiffs. It certainly won't solve as...
Jim, is it accepted by the plaintiffs, however, as a figure to work on?
We are willing to accept the figure.
So he's not that far off.
Well, but what it certainly misstates what it's doing.
Please continue, Jim.
With number four, it suggests that it will eliminate continued controversy over land issues. It certainly won't. It's in number six. It says that the process of determining is it is in the best interest of both to permit some transactions to go forward as long as the trust is fairly compensated. It certainly doesn't solve the Wishbone Hill problem that they need some additional mental health lands to get into operation. It certainly doesn't solve Usabelli Coal Mine's problem that they have a lease extension that they need to get to continue operation. I take great exception to this concept which DNR seems to have, that issuing a right-of-way doesn't mean anything because you technically still have the land, where in actuality when a right-of-way is issued, that means that the land can't be used for anything else, and that's a loss of land, and that's certainly been decided by the United States Supreme Court in Lassen v. Arizona. With respect to 8D on page 3, talking about, I mean, what it's doing here is enacting the minority report's position, essentially. In 8D, it talks about the value of trust lands in other states.
Excuse me, Jim, let me make a statement there. As you say, this is essentially enacting the minority report. As a legislator, vitally interested in mental health and its funding, we are facing here two diametrically, almost seemingly opposed opinions. And from that, we've got to make a decision. And it's either we're going to make a decision with a minority of the board or with a majority of the board amended some way or other. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
In our view, of course, Chapter 48 was designed in this area to have the commission's procedures be how the value would be determined. And that it also says in chapter 48 that the vote of two is the action of the commission. So that what, in our view, what is happening here is that the administration has refused and failed to follow the clear dictates of chapter 48. And what this bill does is simply do what was intended in 1987.
Madam Chair, you bring up a point, and I wonder if we could. I wonder if you, you know, the you two gentlemen could comment on it. We set up the board, and it was 2-1. There was a minority and a majority for it. And that, then what's the role of the commissioner in impasse? What, how does she come in? The commissioner is saying that the procedure was not appropriately met. Is that a legal determination or what? What's the commissioner's role? How does all that work? And who makes the decision whether it complied or didn't comply with the direction of the legislature? Is that also under dispute? Mr. Custer, possibly?
Tom? Madam Chair, if I might, there are two interpretations that are being made of what was done in Chapter 48.
Yeah, okay.
And Mr. Gottstein, I think, has just summarized their position. That is, the Chapter 48 established an Intermental Health Trust Commission. The representative was, or the makeup were two representatives of the plaintiffs and interveners, one representative of the Department of Natural Resources. The legislature provided that on a 2-1 vote, the commission would reach a decision, and that the commission did. The two representatives, the plaintiffs and interveners, decided that this was the way it should be done, and that's the end of the issue. We read Chapter 48 as what it has been described as, a proposed settlement framework. That is, a proposal for a resolution mutually acceptable to both sides. And the way that that was done in Chapter 48 was that the commissioner was to propose valuation procedures. The commission would review and approve those procedures. The commission not on the result of the procedures, because there would be some application involved. But there would be a review of the value determined by the commission, and a critique, and therefore sort of a fully developed record with a value determined by the commissioner, which the plaintiffs would then be free to challenge on whatever grounds might be raised by the commission in terms of reviewing. That's what we interpreted the law as saying. And frankly, that seems to be what makes sense. There is a provision in Chapter 48 that requires the commissioner to propose procedures to the commission. There is a provision in Chapter 48 that requires the commissioner to use those procedures to determine the value, and there is a provision that requires the commission to review the value. Now, under their interpretation of the statute, all of that is irrelevant. There's no need for the commissioner to propose procedures. There's no need for the commissioner to apply procedures. And there's no need for the commission to review the results. So in effect, what that does is say these sections of the law were really useless or unnecessary. That doesn't seem to make sense. It also doesn't seem to make sense that in proposing a framework for settlement, which presumably is going to be agreeable to both sides, that in effect the legislature said, well, we're going to propose a framework for settlement, which is going to be agreeable to both sides, but if there's not agreement, then one side prevails. That just does not seem to make sense in terms of what was intended by the legislature. And it's for that reason that we reached the conclusion that we did in looking at the language that was in the law that says the commissioner proposes and the commission reviews those procedures and then approves them. And then the commissioner uses them. That's what our interpretation was, and that's obviously not the interpretation.
Madam Chair, before Jim responds, because I'd like some more discussion on this. The way that the bill was proposed, Senator Coghill, originally by you, had used the evaluation process and really signed off on that. As I'm understanding in other words, gave credence to the process that was used, and that's obviously a dispute in terms of what the commissioner is telling us. But when I read your proposed committee substitute now, you've taken that out, which does not, and I'm going to ask a question on the basis of that. It takes out that statement about it following the evaluation. And then I have to ask, have we in fact, as a legislature, followed the intent of the law that we passed earlier? Because we do not resolve that issue in the legislation that you're proposing. It doesn't say you're right or you're right. It doesn't say anything about it, if I'm being correct, in the way you proposed it now.
Madam Chair, through the Chair, Senator Drewski, I think that what it does, in our view, what we tried to do with that way, is that it follows the intent while at the same time addressing the expressed concern of DNR that the specific procedures not be approved so that they could be used against them in other proceedings. And so that's the idea. From our perspective, so long as the valuation is the same as that would be arrived at by following the procedures approved by the commission, then we think you are following the intent of Chapter 48.
Wait just a minute. Here I've got to say something, Jim. Having worked on the original legislation, being a part of writing it, all of us, most of us here have, there was nothing in that legislation that said that we were going to accept or favor one or another procedure other than the procedure we set down in law, which was just quoted by his interpretation, what was presented to us at the time we passed it. Is that not correct? You were here.
Yes, and I think that that's what this says. I mean, there is a differing interpretation of what that means, and what this legislation does, as indicated in page 1-2, is it enacts the state's interpretation of what that legislation means, and Mr. Custer says he doesn't think our interpretation makes sense, and we certainly don't. We think that the state's interpretation goes against the plain meaning when you read the statute, and that it doesn't make sense. I mean, and also that the commission did exactly what the act says. It said the commissioner proposed procedures. The commission reviewed those procedures, And then it approved procedures. Now, Mr. Custer and in the minority report, they add a word that's not in the statute. When they say, and Mr. Custer just did it again, he says that the commission is to review and approve the procedures proposed by the commissioner. That is not what Chapter 48 says. It just says that the commission shall review procedures proposed. The commission did that. And then what it says is that the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall determine the fair market value under procedures approved by the commission. And the commission did approve procedures, and the commissioner is refusing to follow that. Okay, now he says, well, why did, it doesn't make any sense for the state to set up a procedure where, basically, set up a procedure that will result, that has to result in a resolution. What his suggestion is that the parties had to agree for it to, you know, for it to work. That was certainly never our intent, that the parties had to agree. We all wanted to be able to come to something that we could all agree on, and we worked very hard. We worked very hard on that. But we always felt that if you followed Chapter 48, that there would be an answer, and that would be what was taken. And to us, that's the only thing that makes sense. That's certainly what we thought when we agreed to stop all, you know, all challenges to mental health lands when we, to go it through
this
procedure.
It seems that there were three interpretations: what the legislature thought they were doing, what you thought they were doing, and what the state thought they were doing.
And
because
what?
To us, review does not mean veto power. We use that often.
No, but approve. The commission is to approve.
Madam Chair,
yes.
If I may for a minute, as an
alternate. I'm not a judge. I'm not going to do that part. I'll tell you what I thought.
As an alternate for the commission, but my understanding when we got started, that rather than create a whole new staff to do this thing for the trust commission, that we would rely on the expertise within its limits in DNR to do the work. And they would propose procedures, really under the guidance of the commission. And over again, for at least the last 18 months, Dr. Rogers has said the fair market value approach for resource land is the income approach. And for 18 months, they never proposed that procedure. Lydia and George got, let's say, exhausted by that, had the material before them with an appropriate procedure under consultants retained by the attorneys. That's the only offering that they had with the appropriate fair market value procedure before them. That's what they ended up having approved, even after, independently, DNR got, I think, three different opportunities to critique that procedure, none of which called it the wrong approach. None of them said that procedure is wrong. So we envisioned, rely on their expertise, here's a procedure, you approve it, and then you apply it. And they never, see, how long could you go on it before they would offer a proper procedure? And
okay.
George got tired of it and said, this is the one we're going to accept.
I can understand that frustration, because I feel that the committees of this legislature are feeling that same frustration. In that we perceive, or I perceive, that we have a number of choices. We have the choice to accept what you guys want, or we have a choice to accept an alternative, or somewhere in between. And we were told by your commission, we called them off early this year. They went through all the procedures, and it was the determination of this committee at that time that we are not by any means going to get into the method of evaluating lands. That's not our business, and we don't want in the method. That's one of the things we put in the hands of somebody. It's their business when we passed the legislation originally. But it seems to me at this stage in the game, as a committee, suffering the same frustrations in a body where many are suffering the same frustrations, have a lot less level of understanding of what the devil's going on than this committee, or you guys. That our job now, as a committee, is to come to some decisions as to which method we're willing to try to fight for and see if we can go from here. And Rogers told us, and the commissioner told us, that we had an alternative. If we didn't want to mess around with how you evaluate lands, pick a number. Now, you want 2.24. They want way the heck below that. And others are suggesting everything in between. I came up with a very scientific, well thought out method. I added two together, divided by two, and came up with a figure. Now, I think I've stated that before, which was from nothing. But it's not the first time in the history of man that a legislature has grabbed a figure out somewhere and put it in legislation out of frustration. It may be what we have to do. I think personally that we are faced, and I want committee members to critique me on this or criticize or say what they think. I think if we have a hope in this period of time of trying to come to some means where we're not facing this thing over and over again, that we need to accept that and try to make it. I would like to try very hard to come up with some form of legislation through this that we think can be accepted, whether you like it or agree upon it, but accepted as a somewhere near a reasonable compromise, maybe is the word. And if you don't feel like compromising, fine. Then, or having a bill of this sort, then we have the other approach. Go to the courts and ask the judges, hey, we don't know what to do. Tell us what the heck we can do. And add, rather than four or five, about 15 different, anybody and everybody's idea how we solve this problem. Frankly, I'd like to solve it. And I think everybody here would. But we don't know. And what I'm getting from a lot of committee chairs as we try to look at, are we doing any good here? Are we wasting our time here? Are we going to be able to achieve anything from here? Is what we've got many times, it's not going to make any difference what we do. We're going to be in court anyway. Now, if that's the opinion of the state and of the mental health community advisors or lawyers, then we are indeed wasting our time. I just happen to not like that approach. And I'm hoping we can arrive something. Yeah. It seems to me that in this, I'm preaching right now. I'll get to you. It seems to me in this, that we've gotten very close. I'm frustrated, and I'm sorry.
No.
Taking it out on you guys. We've gotten very close to something that I think is workable. I don't know whether there's support here for it or not, or anybody else agrees with me. I'm speaking for me. That I still have a problem with trying to evaluate land swaps. That still bothers me. You may have to draw me a picture, but I cannot see on land which a value has not been established how an acre for an acre doesn't work. In land that you're not managing anyway, but it's managed somebody else and using for a base or a lever to keep us on straight and narrow and make sure that we live up to our commitments. And that's the way I see it. Maybe I see it wrong. You can correct me. And I think we need to make a decision on not the methodology, but whether or not we want to set a worth on the land. Well, and go from there. If not, we've got others.
Are you saying you arrive at that figure, 1,100 acres, whatever it is, within one framework, or we go back to the, that's not acceptable, we go back to the proposal that Mr. Custer has here?
Somewhat. I'm saying, hey, can we come to this where people agree with it, think we can get it going?
Or if we don't, we
go with this. What are we doing?
No. I ask Madam Chair that, boy, I'd sure like to see this resolved.
Me too.
But my major concern, maybe I'm reaching, it's the reconstitution part where we put in all of the acres of land, and so much happens with land. We're reaching, and I hate to use the term, but it's almost like reaching from the grave in setting up a trust where it goes on, and all the things we can't contemplate that are going to happen to that land may happen to that land. And I really have a problem with that, because land changes, our value of land, our use of land, all kinds of things happen. And by getting rid of one and then creating another, that's the thing that really, really bothers me, because I've seen us, there's a dynamic to ownership of land. And we've moved very quickly to put land in certain classifications, but we can't sit here today in those 10 and 20 years what's going to happen to that land, what should happen to the land in the best interest of the people of this state. We had a discrete amount of land and we've screwed up, and there's no question about it. This has not been handled well. And, you know, by the fact we haven't resolved it, we're a part of that problem. I believe that. But I also think that getting rid of one problem that has been handled so badly and creating a potential with 13 million acres out there, because in a sense it gives more leverage, I would rather create a money trust of some kind from Binkham Sands or something, or be able to have a specific amount of something forever, and it can have its readjustment, reevaluation. But to bring in the land and all of the things that can happen, the biggest thing that's going to face this state, and I don't want to sound like I'm preaching, but I
go ahead and preach.
Real strongly. You know, we've got like 26-27% of the acreage in state ownership and 60% of the federal ownership, and we have got court cases and problems in terms of our land and our land management that are incredible, and we're not handling half of those that we should be. And so here we're setting up another dynamic in terms of all of those acres of land out there, and that I don't know how to get around that, because what you want on behalf of your clients is additional leverage. You behave yourself or we're going to have you back in court, and I understand that. But I don't know that that's in the best interest of the people of this state. That's where I'm coming from.
Madam Chair, if I might, I think that we have to remember that the original million acres was granted not really to the state for all the people, but it was granted first for support of the mental health program.
And
the state accepted that when it accepted the land. And that all of these ideas that are being raised now about a money trust or a guaranteed income stream or that kind of thing were in fact discussed in 1986-87, and the approach embodied in Chapter 48, which we think the current bill simply implements, was considered to be the best solution. And the reason why I have difficulty, I understand your point that you don't know what you're going to do with the land in the future, and you have a great deal of uncertainty about that and concern about that, but the type of land that was selected to be put into this trust as a replacement trust was very specifically selected to be the legislative designations for a particular reason, and the reason for that was that it was contemplated, with rare exceptions, that land was going to remain in state ownership, remain in those legislative designations, and that the state would be able, so long as it was complying with the trust, continue to use those lands the way it would have anyway, so that it really made no difference to the management of state lands under this bill, that it would be done exactly the same way with this or without it, except that it freed up the original million acres to do with what the state wanted. And then when that was considered to be the rare exception where the state might want to take something out of the trust, that it would just have to replace it with equal value. And the reason why it's equal value rather than equal acreage is we think that that's really what's required under trust law, that you have to put in something that's worth as much as you're taking out. And I think under the suggestion of Senator Cockhill to just let the commissioner do it, and if the board doesn't approve it, let legislative budget and audit, that it shouldn't be that difficult. And it seems to me, Senator Fahrenkamp, that we are very close to this and that we ought to be able to work it out, and I certainly hope that we can.
Senator, if I might, again, as an alternate commissioner, one thing when you're characterizing them versus us, I think if you go back and look at what George and Lydia approved, it wasn't the plaintiff and the intervener's problem. If you look at each of the decisions, they had some things to draw where they knew they had two figures to deal with. In some instances, they had only one, and they adopted the one. That there were compromises made by George and Lydia throughout, given limits of time and money, that don't have the higher figure. And if you went and did the proper procedures, including the surface estate, my feeling, according to how this land should have been managed, the figure is only going to go higher on these two fellows' hands. the figures at a certain low end on their end. George and Lydia finally got so frustrated with it that they essentially did, in some ways, some approved procedures that did the hair splitting that you would have to be agonized for. That there was decisions to be made, and there, this is the end of the information. What's the best recommendation they can give with possible extremes and time to quit? So this isn't their figure. This is the commission's figure, the majority of the commission's figure.
I'm using them side versus side, mental health versus...
Right. And the trust commission
so
is...
So please understand that. I don't care what the trust commission, lawyers, clients. I'm just using it in a general, very general way.
I guess, Madam Chair, if I might, I'm just trying to say that the trust commission is between those two already. They have been since the Supreme Court decision happened and you passed Chapter 132 in 1986, that this commission has been between those two extremes through all those years back in 1986.
It's a tough job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had...
Keeps you interested.
You know, we kind of have a few things, like a guide task force, timber force,
Madam Chair, I just wanted to say first, Mr. Gustin said that if we do go to court to seek instructions, it will be adversarial. It certainly will not be adversarial on the state's part. Mr. Walker said that the proposed bill makes a clear intention that the state wants to eliminate the trust. Well, that's simply not true. In fact, the set-off provision that the court authorized in the Weiss case has never been taken advantage of by the state. And it gets real irritating time after time to keep being accused of trying to defeat the trust, trying to eliminate the trust, when the state has been as supportive as it possibly can of the trust. We jointly sponsored Chapter 48 with the plaintiffs and interveners, handing over management authority for these lands to a commission that was dominated by representatives of the plaintiffs. We paid more than $800,000 in attorney fees alone to the plaintiffs for their use in dealing with this issue. When their consultant fees and costs and computer fees are added onto that, it goes well over $1 million. Now, to say that we're not supportive of the trust is simply wrong, and it really gets irritating after a while to continually be accused of having one agenda, and that's to eliminate the trust. And it really does get frustrating after a while. It also is very frustrating, I'm sure, to the Department of Natural Resources, which deals with fair market value all the time, to have this value be the one that is the continual focus of discussion, and in Dr. Scholl's view, represents the compromise made by the commission. The large bulk of that value is the mineral estate value. And ISIP at the University of Alaska Anchorage had this to say about the mineral value. The test of an appraisal is whether it approximates fair market value. Fair market value is what the asset would bring in a competitive market disposal held today. Historic levels of mining industry activity in Alaska coupled with long-term trends in world mineral markets simply do not support the notion that the mineral rights on the Mental Health Trust lands would command $1.5 billion today or at any time in the foreseeable future. Professor Harris, who in large part developed this methodology, looked at the report by the consultants. He stated, the least equivocal judgment that can be made about the analysis performed by the plaintiff's experts is that there can be little confidence that the fair market value of the Alaska Mental Health lands is $1.5 billion. That's what the commissioner is trying to deal with here. The statute says determine fair market value. These two consultants, not retained by the plaintiffs, one perhaps the leading, if not certainly a leading, if not the leading expert in this methodology, the other, the Institute of Social and Economic Research at the University of Alaska Anchorage, both informed the commission and the commissioner that that number cannot be used with any confidence whatever. There really is a serious and fundamental dispute over this valuation methodology. And there's a very serious concern that given the charge in Chapter 48 to determine fair market value, that if the legislature adopts that value, the result will be, as we're seeing with Siri right now in the Solovia Land Exchange, that methodology coming back to haunt the state, people arguing that this is a methodology to determine fair market value. That's a very serious problem. Now, in terms of how we can perhaps get out of this box, notwithstanding those problems, if we're willing to ignore those problems, simply set them aside and not worry about them, but deal with the replacement lands issue. The Department of Natural Resources methodology yielded $564 million for the original grant, $910 million for the replacement lands. That might be a springboard for determining what portion of the 10 million acres under DNR's procedures would be of equivalent value. Make the assumption or leap of faith that under the other methodology it would be the same, and then designate, instead of the full 10 million, whatever that works out, 60% somehow. Another alternative would be to let the plaintiff's experts value the pool of replacement lands with their methodology. That way, at least you'd be able to match value for value, come up with something in the nature of equivalent value. And a third approach would be the one suggested by the chairman. That is, simply use the total pool, but go for an acre-for-acre replacement. But what it reinforces is that there certainly are some very serious questions that the committee has to wrestle with. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty that the commissioner has had is that the experts informed the commissioner that you cannot use those procedures because they do not produce fair market value. And that's what the statute required.
Senator Lass.
I'm not so really hung up on the fair market value. I think it's a problem, but it's not the problem that I think you have defined for us just in the last day or so is I don't think we want to look forward to 5 years down the road and paying $1 million or $2 million to resolve this issue again and come back in 5 more years and do the same thing again. You know, that's the part that bothers me. And I think that it's possible maybe that you could use this procedure, this methodology to say this could be used in this one particular case. This is not state policy, but we'll use it in this one particular case. I don't know if that'll apply or not. That might get stereotyped. But we can make that clear. This is this particular case because there are other things involved besides just methodology. There's not a trust been gone, lost in this little affair. And I think you can probably make a good argument. But my concerns, like I share with you, that I don't think we should revisit this every 5 years. It's too damn expensive. It takes up too much time. We should be able to reasonably settle it. But you're going to be a judge.
Senator Cock, Elder Jim.
Madam Chairman, in the interim committee that I served on with Senator Fischow and Senator Fisher on trying to come to some kind of a consensus on this, that was the big issue in November, was the fair market value and all of the stuff that Tom talked about. And I asked the question, and I believe it's a matter of record, said, well, if we got away from fair market value, where that this was meant for the purposes of establishing a mental health program, and if we went to a independent structure, would that take care of the issue? And they all agreed that it would take care of about 80% of the issue. Because the problem is that what was being done here in the trust was going to fall over and what they were doing. That's the reason why we took out fair market and put in rental value in this proposed CS work.
Madam Chair, we've always been willing to accommodate the state's concern about trying to do what Senator Lyson said, which is to try and make insulate what happens here from being used against the state in other arenas, and that's what we intended to do here. If there's additional language that Mr. Custer would like to propose to do that even more than it's done here, then we certainly, you know, have no problem with taking a look at that. And I think that, you know, that's a way to move forward. I've gotten the feeling that DNR has said this any number of times. We've already tried to accommodate them, but when it comes down to it, that they are diametrically opposed to using the procedures approved by the commission or the value arrived at using those procedures under any circumstances. And
well,
if that's
I told
true,
you, Jim, I'm not going to get into that.
Right.
You know, the methodology to me is no matter how we word it, no matter what happens, it's known throughout this state. You know, if you take a figure that's set on one methodology and you take a figure that's set on another methodology and you choose a figure on that one methodology, no matter how you word it, people aren't dumb. Am I wrong? Do you think there's not been enough publicity on this
thing? Yeah, well, there's a number of reasons, and I'm obviously not familiar with the Siri situation. Is there more than 100,000 acres involved? According to Metz and Dixon in their report, they say that the statistical validity of their approach is only true if you have 100,000 acres or more involved. And what it is, see, what Metz and Dixon did is they say, as Dr. Rogers is
saying, well, we've been through that.
Yeah, is that they're not saying that this particular piece of land has this many minerals. What they're saying is that by looking at all the data, comparing, you know, the data about geology and mines in the region, other similar regions, that within the 1 million acres, there are going to be X number of finds that will equal the $1.5 billion.
Probability.
Probability. And that it could be higher, it could be lower, but this is their best guess. But they also say that there is no statistical validity to that method unless you have a large enough sample, and that's 100,000 acres. And so Tom just indicated, they just indicated 100,000 acres isn't involved in cooking. I don't know how often you're going to get 100,000.
And we get 100,000 acres, more than 100,000 acres,
okay. The other
every
thing,
year, and at least two or three pieces of legislation.
The other thing about this is that, again, because of the way the minerals was done, and in fact, the way that the commission split the difference between the surface value in gross rather than each parcel, is that the original 1 million acres was valued in whole again, and so there is no specific valuation determination for any particular parcel, for any of them. So it seems to me that that makes it much more difficult for anybody else to use that against the state. Now, as I indicated, if there's additional comfort that the state, you know, would like to propose.
I have to be right there. I have a question to leading to what I think your question is. Tom, how much, quote, mental health trust lands do we now have? How much is left? How much is left? How many acres? Mineral all.
600,000.
4,000
acres. State
ownership. No, because you still got
207,000
plus the parks.
How much is it?
370,000 in parks. So
how much though is not in parks? How much then is separate?
207,000
acres.
207,000
acres
is the remaining outside.
Okay, now I have 207,000 acres.
222,000.
Of course, it's ours.
Is that mostly mineral lands? You have
now. Mixture.
Excuse me?
Mixture.
Mixture.
Biggest percentage.
What is it? Coal fields, I keep hearing, for one. Two different coal fields.
Blue coal field.
And the blue.
Yeah. Well, most of that has been transferred to Cook Inlet.
Some has.
A big chunk has.
I'm not so sure you shouldn't manage those particular lands. You get a lot more out of them than the state. Well, the state's giving it away. And settle on the rest of it. I'm not so sure that you shouldn't maintain those particular lands you still have left, because you would be forced to get the maximization from the income from those to sustain the programs you're involved in. I don't know if that's a large enough chunk, but that's quite a lot of land nonetheless, particularly if it's minimal, particularly if it's in the areas you suggest. It's valuable.
I'm not sure.
I wouldn't want to pay for them, because I think you'd get more out of it than we would. I'm just thinking out loud. Right?
DNR in the past has been opposed to that approach.
Okay, well, I don't care what DNR is opposed to. That's up to them. I hear you. But so it's too bad that DNR is for it.
Yes.
I'd like to see a comparison between what you guys get and what we get on a given resource body too. I think that would be all the salutary for public consumption.
She's first, then you're next.
Madam Chair, just response to this. I was on the first interim commission when we explored a number of alternatives like that, including looking at the university land and what they're, how they're developing in it and those kinds of things. And basically, all of the scenarios that kept trying to arrive at generally went back to this solution. It was very difficult to find agreement in the parties on that particular issue, but I certainly think there's a lot of people who agree with you on that, but the commission did not arrive at that conclusion after that year's work in process. That's before Chapter 48.
Well, Chairperson, I hate to pay for lands that belongs to the Mental Health Trust Commission at estimated values and pay more for them than the state probably will get out of them if it ever disposes of them, when in fact you would get at least that much out of them, you sink or swim with them. I'm not so sure that we hadn't ought to provide you with that land that is already yours, and you ought to get it, and then make compensation or make an arrangement for the balance. University lands do not exceed that amount right now.
Madam Chair, if I might, it's intriguing to recollect that same kind of model being discussed. In fact, it's one that Lydia Sutcraig and I talked about some just before we went into the last two meetings when Chapter 48 was crafted by the attorneys and trying to support.
Sure, I know this is far.
It also addresses two other things. One is that in general, land management practices of the state, as I understand them, do not do what's required to be done with trust land, which is manage the land for maximum revenue generation in the long-term best interest of a particular trust.
Precisely.
That is one of the things that by settling in on the value recommended by the commission, you would, in a sense, be buying the right to do, is get those original lands and manage them as you will with anything else that DNR manages, and if they think that's a good deal, then that's okay. Personally, I didn't think it was either. I would agree with you on that.
Well, they have another requirement
have another
as well.
Requirement.
Common good.
A broader thing for the state as opposed to the trust. But that's, essentially, that's one thing. By accepting this kind of proposal, you would be allowing the state to do is continue to manage those lands and even the legislatively designated lands according to their management practices rather than the other higher standard, higher revenue generating practices of a trust.
And then again, you wouldn't be having the expense of land management and setting up that whole regime that is, believe me, we fight every year over budgets. I don't think you want into that business, but maybe it'd be good. Let me see some of the problems. Yes.
Well, I'd also point out that, and Gary Gustafson, I'm sure, can bear this out, management of land for long-term revenue-generating purposes is simply not that lucrative. And that's certainly the experience in the lower 48 with respect to trust.
It's the experience with the University of Alaska as well, I might add.
But if you have developing projects right on the fringes, oil, gas, other minerals, they might be that lucrative too. You've selected first. You know, they might, you know, land and even timberland. I'm talking about probably well selected parcels based on maximization of the mental health land values, I mean, above the average.
Senator Lassen and Senator Coghill.
I'm sure I was thinking
it might be the exception.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Let's think about money rather than lands for a minute.
We've been thinking about money, but almost.
Yeah. But somehow, has there any been, you know, I don't know, probably not very popular in some circles, but is there somehow or ever a way to tie your security for these lands into the permanent fund? You're not going to take anything out, but you have a security sitting there.
Permanent fund.
Why not? We gave them $5 million.
We're not taking anything out. We're using that as
the
vehicle rather than depositing lands, which the value is really questionable. We don't want the money's worth in the fund. If we could deal on that level, I don't know if it's possible, but it seems to me, if anything's permanent state, that seems to be a permanent.
That's permanent.
So, you know, I might have a mortgage on the permanent fund. But has that been looked at?
Yes, it has.
It was decided 3 years ago that was politically not doable. It was something that we certainly were willing to consider. I think we were even willing to accept it, but it was decided that was something that simply was not politically possible.
Well, anything's politically possible.
Shades of Halford, yes.
Madam Chair, I think the frustration you're seeing here is that basically, I mentioned to you the other day that we've been trying to argue these kinds of points for a long time, but we've been arguing the monologue. It's, the state has really been very slow at responding in a positive, compromising way on some of these things, so it's very difficult. Some of the, we've got to impasse quickly on many of these issues because the state said it's not acceptable. It's just not acceptable. And that's why I think the proposal before you really is an answer that seems to be all but one of those criteria that they are concerned about. But
it may be an answer for you, honey, but I'm having troubles up here. Have you noticed? Senator Gargill?
Madam Chairman, what the good senator from Matsu's has brought up is part of the frustration. That kind of goes back in your opening the creaky doors of history on chapter 84 or 48, and the bill that was preceding to that. The thing is that what we're trying to do in this draft is to establish that function so that we can go forward with the management of those lands that are quote-unquote mental health lands now. They will fall off of the trust. You're establishing those that are designated into the trust. You're establishing that the mechanism for managing what you're exactly saying is in this committee substitute. We've got mechanism for managing is.
I thought in the committee substitute turned it over to
DNR.
It is a mechanism for managing.
That's right. And we're establishing here a mechanism saying that the lands will not be managed separately. They'll be managed according to the common good. So I what I'm trying to say is I think that Madam Chairman, you summarized it very well when you were preaching to us that the frustrations are here. We tried to cover those in this issue here, and if there has to be a recognition of the $2.2 billion, and if they're saying that that's too high, that was the reason why yesterday when we submitted these other amendments, why we got away.
You didn't change it.
No, we didn't.
You didn't change it when I owned it and brought in a lot of wording, right?
Madam Chairman, that was my point. My point was that we set it back to the function of the commission and the numbers, and we took the numbers out so that it would not be the lightning rod. The numbers are still there, yes, but we were taking them out of having them as.
Yeah, just added two more lightning rods. That's all.
This is a whole lightning rod, and all I'm trying to do is hope that we can move forward.
Okay. Frankly, I think that this airing of difficulties, for me, it's been beneficial. I've been trying for months to find out where people stood on this issue. With it, in very few instances, very much success on my end. I think we're getting down to a point where this committee has got to help me make a decision as to where we're going to go. And lay it aside, move it on, and let it live or die as will. I would hope that if we do come out with something, that we as a committee would try our best to help work it through the next committee and try to get it accepted by members of this body. Let me see if I can wrap up. Alison, you still have problems with the land stuff. You'd like to get rid of the lands and get the money into
them. Well, I think Senator Cerulski pretty well brought it to my attention, and my concerns was revisiting this issue.
I have 5 years.
It's an expensive process, and I wasn't aware until it was mentioned here recently how much money we put into it already. And, I don't want to set something up that's going to be revisited, and people are going to go through this scenario, even though it is profitable for some, but it's very annoying to others. I don't think we should do that. I don't think we have to do that. I don't have any I don't really have a real serious problem with the total value. I think we can live with that one way or another, because we're not going to,
Well, the thing.
It's sort of liberal the way they're using it. I mean, we can say this figure, we're not going to spend a lot of money on this program. Maybe in the future we'll have to, but if we have to, we have to. That's the way it is.
Well, the thing that I've been looking at in that area is that at present we're paying 5% of our annual state, right? And that's coming to about what amount of money?
About 112 for next year was the last.
112. Under this, right now, it would come to about what, 180?
170.
180. With God knows what, 5 years from now, somewhere close or somewhere below or somewhere above, according to land values. And we'll pay that much amount of money, plus setting aside 10 million plus acres into a trust. Is that correct? Under this legislation.
And Chair, isn't my understanding that it's really not how much is available, it's how much is needed. There's a difference between what we spend and what could be spent.
Yes, there certainly is.
I can understand the growing program, too.
The growing program and the budget.
But if it's a valid need, maybe that's the purpose of this trust plan to begin with.
It is.
So, you know.
I just want everybody to understand that what we're doing is
we aren't
10 doing plus that. Million, what we're looking at doing. I know we're not doing anything yet. 10 plus million in a trust. The value of 8% bringing from where it's now around 110 to 170, loosely, into the fund, along with that. And reviewing every 5 years through a formula. And giving veto power on land swap or sell.
No.
That's right. We took that out in this one.
We did all.
Yeah. Good. That's got good one. We still have that. Yeah. I think we've gotten the problems eliminated here, there, and the other. It seems to me now that we have one or two or three left. And I'd like to try to have your permission to work on them if you will.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Else we can just. Yes.
Well, just one further question. Could we? It seems to me if they're going to have 10 million acres, is that what we're talking about?
13.
Well, you know, right, that's a lot of land, whether it's an ice field or whether it's a muskeg, whether it's a park or an